Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome back once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 40 for April the 1st. That's April the 1st, 2014. I'm your host, Jack. If you get a chance, please check out my website at tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows, or you can leave me a voice message, and you can leave that message at 724-701-0550. Once again, that's 724-701-0550. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, please drop those in my email box, and that is at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Technoman, or you can follow along with us on Google Plus at jackstechcorner. And that is where we kind of hang out and where we kind of reside for some information here and there. Tonight's beer is brought to you by Miller, and tonight we are drinking a Miller Fortune. Now, if you've never had Miller Fortune, it's a brand new beer. I happen to walk in a beer distributor because here in Pennsylvania we have a beer distributor. We can't go into our local grocery stores and purchase beer. And I walked into the beer distributor, and there was a young lady standing there giving out free samples. And she said, "Sir, have you ever heard of Miller Fortune?" And I said, "Well, of course I haven't heard of it. I didn't see any commercials." Or she said, "Would you like to sample it?" Oh, I never turned down a beer. So she handed me a sample. And off we went. And I had a nice one little sample in a little sample cup. And I said, "It's very good." But I was actually there to buy a different beer. Kind of hung up on buying Newcastle Brown Ale in the little kegs. And if you've ever seen those where you live, try to look around a little bit and try to find those. It's just a small keg of beer. Holds about roughly 20 glasses in there. And it fits in your refrigerator. And once again, that's Newcastle Brown Ale. It's very good. Very, very good beer. So anyway, I was out the other night to a dinner. A dinner to support someone. It was a dinner to raise some money for somebody's house that their house burnt down. So afterwards, we stopped at a bar on the way home, and I grabbed a six-pack to bring home, and I brought home the Miller Fortune. And I have to say, it's not a bad beer. If you drink two of these things, you're going to have a little bit of a buzz. So once again, I know this isn't a beer show, but hey. Even network support people, and believe me, computer people work in the business we work in, folks. Every now and then you need to have a little drink. A little bit of alcohol never hurts anybody, and it can go a long way. Just drinking two beers maybe before you lay down to go to bed at night. With out of the way, I did get a comment on the blog or on Tips from the Server Room where you can go, like I said, and comment on these shows. It was a wonderful comment, and I'd like to thank you very much for posting the comment. Matter of fact, I'm going to give a shout-out here so I can see where it is. Let's see here. Just bringing the comment back up here. Larry. So Larry posted a comment, and Larry, thank you so much for commenting on the show and asking me this question, and we're going to clarify that right now for Larry. "Hi, Jack. Love the show. I usually listen on my way to work in the mornings. I do have a question. I also work in a small school system. We have very slow log-ons, and I'm wondering if it is due to our LAN engineer having all DNS requests dial back to the DC in the central office rather than having a server replicate the AD records to the servers at each individual site. Also, to complicate this even further, we have tons of nodes on XP and wireless district-wide. We have been seeing that imaging systems to Windows 7 where possible has helped, but some still slow logons persist. The DC is running Windows Server 2012. Is there any suggestions that you can relay back to Larry? And I did actually respond back on this comment on tipsfromtheserveroom.com, but I'm going to give it to you here for everybody listening, because we're all going to run into this problem, and it is one of those the problems where you have to have, and I said this before, we've talked about this some time ago, and if you go to my YouTube videos, I actually did a video on setting up DNS and how critically important it is to get those DNS records right. Now, here's the problem. When you go from one building to the other, all right, let me step that back once. Because in our district, the way we have it, we have two buildings on one campus. I have a 12-pair fiber optic cable going under the driveway and under the parking lot and what have you. And our buildings are connected directly together. So basically, we just built one big network. We don't have separate routers in each building. When you get a separate router in a building and you're trying to route a signal out to find a DNS server on the other side, that is where you're going to start having some major issues. Now, Larry said something about replicating your AD records. It's not the AD records we're going to worry about, Larry. We want to replicate the DNS records. So you want to put a DNS server in each individual location. Let those DNS records replicate themselves back and forth with the central office. So any change we make on the DNS server to central office will be replicated back out to those other school systems, those other areas. The logins are going to be tremendously faster, because what's happening right now is, and I don't know how they actually set this up, if they're routing the signals or, and I know we can route and that we could build routes even across fiber optic, even across public fiber optic lines, you can make routes even across cable internet. But generally, I see what happens with folks, what they're doing is, and sometimes it happens if you don't have your internal DNS set up properly, is you'll make the request, say you're in one of these outlying schools, a small school system. So we're in a, say we're in an elementary school and we're a quarter mile or maybe a mile away from our central office. So some people will set this thing up. So you make the request and it goes out and looks across the internet. Now, that's a problem in itself. If you have a routable DNS system set up, in other words, if you have, let's say you have dns.myhostingcompany.org.com, and you think that it's a good idea to have those schools or have those outlying office buildings go across the internet to find that DNS server, it's going to go through a outside IP address. It's going to go through probably a static statement, and then it's going to go into an internal address or an internal static or a NAT address. And then it's going to resolve that server name or whatever, and then go back through that same route. This is not the way you want to do things. And you don't have to replicate the Active Directory records. You have to replicate the DNS records. DNS is what's giving you a slow login response. I've seen it at least a million times. I left one job some years ago now, probably about 10 years ago, and I turned it over to a young systems administrator who I thought was very good. I actually brought her up through the ranks, and I trained her and taught her, but there's some things we just can't teach. Or some things we may forget or may slip our minds. And it's probably because it was running fine. But when she tried to go from a Windows Server 2003, and she upgraded to Windows Server 2008 back then, whenever that was, she called me and said, "Jack, my logins are taking 20 minutes. What's wrong?" So even on the internal network, even if you have your server located with you and you think everything's set up properly, if you don't have DNS and have all your computers pointing to that DNS server, your logins are going to be horrible. Ever since the invention of Windows Server, and there's nobody in my Spreaker chat room tonight. But ever since Windows Server, I believe it was 2000, we started to see the birth of DNS for routing all these different packets. We've been doing it for years across the internet, and then Microsoft finally came up with an idea. Well, we should probably route this stuff through DNS instead of using WINs. And we used to use those dreaded host files on each and every computer on the network. And a host file would do basically the same thing DNS would do, but DNS does it centrally. The host files had to be on each individual computer. Now, Larry, I'm going to add something to my response. I'm going to add it right here since I mentioned the host file. If you go to your computer and you said you're loading Windows 7, if you have Windows XP, even though it's going to be going out here in another 8 or 7 days, they will still work and they'll still function. What's going to happen is you can go, if you go to the C directory and under Windows, and go under Windows and look for sysvol, sysvol, I believe that's correct. Or no, sorry, system32, go under system32, and then go into drivers. In drivers, is it drivers? I'm actually sitting here with a non-Windows computer in front of me without a virtual machine open. But in there, you're looking for a host file. If you go in that host file, now I'm telling you locally, if you don't want to set a DNS server up at this school, and I don't know how many systems you have, but this is a solution, you can try it. Put a host file in there and put in there your Active Directory server. So let's just say you're routing out through that school and you're going to a different building or whatever. And I don't know, the server is 192.168.1.10. Put that in there, the IP address, and put in there that server name. Then when they go log on that computer, it will directly find it without having a DNS server on premises. You're just setting up individual DNS records per computer using the old method of host files. And do some searching around. If you're not sure about it, by all means, drop me an email. Say, hey, Jack, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm sure we can help you out with a host file. Occasionally, we still use them once in a while a few years ago. But like I said, once you get your DNS server set up properly and everything's routing through there, then you'll be golden. So, and like Forrest Gump used to always say, that's all I got to say about that. But yeah, if you have any other questions, by all means, send those in to me, and I would gladly take a look at that, and we'll try to figure that out. Okay. Had to pause there for a short beer. And now we're going to pause and see what my little commercial sounds like, and then we'll be right back with you. Have you ever wanted to create a podcast and just didn't know where to begin? Do you have a great idea for a show and just don't know how to get it out into the world? Check out Digital Biz Learning at learn.digitalbiz.co. There you will find a course to teach you to podcast, from software to hardware and everything in between. Once again, that's learn.digitalbiz.co. Once again, it's learn.digitalbiz.co. Now, back to the show. I actually thought that was a different take on a commercial. So, hey, if you're into podcasting, check that out. It's one of my off sites that I've created there. So, that was actually a commercial for a different show, but I just want to throw that out there to you. Anyhow, tonight, if you looked at the title, we're talking about Shadow Copy. Shadow Copy comes with Windows Server 2008. And 2012. I never used it in 2003. And if you're using Windows Server 2003, hopefully you have a ball bat or a sledgehammer and you can smash that server, take it offline, and upgrade yourself to at least 2008. Anyway, Shadow Copy, what it does, it protects versions. And it protects your users from making dumb, rather stupid mistakes. And it happens. We got a call once that said, it went sort of like this. Jack, oh my God, I can't believe I just did that. And God, I hope you can get it back. Okay, what's wrong? Well, Jack, I tell you what's wrong. I was right-clicking on different files, and oops, I deleted a file that I've been, you know, that I've been adding to for the past several years. It's rather large, and I don't have it any longer. I said, well, that's okay. Let me go ahead and take a look. I hung the phone up, and I went to dig around, and sure enough, I had it. And the reason I had it is because I created and I put on Shadow Protect. So what it does, it basically has revisions. Every time there's a revision made, Shadow Protect will protect that. It's called actually Shadow Copy Protect, but Shadow Copy. And to set Shadow Copy up, it is extremely easy to set Shadow Copy up. Now, what I like to do is, some people make this mistake. They'll set up Shadow Copy on the exact same drive that the files are on. Here's the problem with that. If that particular drive fails for any reason, there goes all your Shadow Copies. Well, that's a really good backup strategy. What we do is we put a separate hard drive in, or you can use a NAS, a network attached storage device, if you wish. And you can set up a shared folder on there or on a different hard drive, not a partition. That's another mistake. Well, Jack, I had on another partition. Yeah, and the motor fried in the drive, or the aperture went bad, or the laser, the reading arm, the disks, so much can go wrong. And just because you got that hard drive split in two doesn't mean the data is protected. It just means that there's two partitions. So no, set up on a separate drive somewhere so you know it's relatively safe. And all you got to do is right-click on a shared file folder, and you go under Shadow Copy, click on that, and just go through the settings. It's very easy to do. Now, so that's how we enable and configure Shadow Copy. Just like I said, right-click on a shared file folder. Make sure the administrative account has full access to the file folder, and turn on Shadow Copy. When you do that, you'll go through the settings and you'll see in there where it tells you where do you want to save these copies at. Because it's going to make a copy. Every time there's a revision made, it'll make a copy of that file for you. Put this on a different drive. Just set it up and put it on some other drive. Now, how do you restore from a previous version or file folder? Well, it's pretty simple, actually. I didn't have any trouble at all restoring from the file folder. What I actually did was, I went out and I went to the location where I was storing all the shadow copies. I found the client's folder. I went in there and actually found the file, and I just simply copied it and put it back into their directory, into their working directory. I called them back up and I said, hey, let's take a look at that again and see if that is in there. And in fact, it was. And I was the hero. You know, you hear that song playing, Did You Know I Was a Hero? And many, many times, us as network administrators, the folks out there that protect the backup files, that makes us a hero in their book. Now, you can also use previous versions to enable your users to access previous versions of the files or folders on the network. To enable access to previous versions, you must enable shadow copied of shared folders on the file server. So whatever server you have, and I don't like when people say file server, because it may not be just a file server. It may be doing DNS. It may be doing something else other than just storing files. So anyway, you're going to do this wherever your shared folders are. The shadow copies are copies of the files that are located on the server, and they appear as previous versions. So any single version you have, you can actually save that as, and it will save it automatically as a previous version. Now, once you enable previous version, your users access this feature using a folder properties dialog box. So the user now can go into the folder properties dialog box, and they will see what available versions appear in there, and it will be under the previous versions tab under folder versions. Now, the reason that's nice is because us as systems administrators, we get to have hands off. So the user can even go in there first and have a look and see if they have a previous version that they would like to restore. When they find that, they can click on it, click on restore, and it will put it back to where it's supposed to be located at. Now, again, this is a very useful feature because the users can recover files that were accidentally deleted. If you accidentally delete a file, you can open a previous version and copy it to a safe location. Recover from accidentally overwriting a file. How many times has this happened to your users? Where they're working on a file, they're doing something with it, and they accidentally overwrite the actual file. And here, and I've done it, folks. Here's what happens. I have my new budget opened up. I'm working on this budget. And for some reason, I save it with last year's dates. And I just overwrote last year's budget. Not that it's important until somebody calls me and says, hey, what did we buy last year? And then I have to have that actual last year's budget so I can actually read that and have a look to see what we actually bought last year. And so I have overwritten files before. You can actually compare versions of a file you're working on. Now you can use previous versions when you want to check what has changed between two versions of the file. So they can go in there and actually look, say, well, how much work did I do today on this paper, on this book or whatever? And they're reading it, and maybe they see something they liked from before better, and they copy and paste in between the two different versions. This is very important. This feature is not a replacement for creating regular backups. I've had that problem before at a doctor's office I worked at. They were doing shadow copies, and they thought they were fine and well protected, but they had no daily backups. You should use a backup utility, and we've talked about them in the past, such as either Windows Server Backup in Windows Server 2008 or Windows Server 2008 R2. In coordination with shadow copies of shared folders from previous versions as your strategy for data protection. So make sure wherever you're copying these files to, wherever your shadow copy is putting these files, back that stuff up also. So many people don't. Then we have a major server crash or major hard drive array crash, and all those files are gone. Because we said, well, it's good enough they're shadow copied, but it's really not good enough. You have to have a backup of that stuff. If we don't have a backup, then we're kind of lost in the water. Remember that previous versions are read-only. You cannot make changes to the previous version as the file exists on the server. The reason it is because we don't want us, as the network administrators, to accidentally delete a folder full of the shadowed copy files. So they're read-only. In addition, a previous version and are periodically deleted and can disappear at any time. If you think you might want a previous version of a file, you should copy it to another folder so that it is not deleted. And this is simply just a purging routine. When it gets so many different versions of a certain file, it will start purging the old ones off. So if your user, if your worker, if somebody wants to use that, what you can tell them to do is simply copy that off, maybe to a thumb drive, maybe to an external hard drive, or whatever makes them happy. Now, how do I enable and configure shadow copies or shared folders to make previous versions available? You would go into the feature. It is included in shadow folders in the Microsoft Management Console or MMC Snap-in. If you enable shadow copies of shared folders on the volume using the default values, a task will be scheduled to create shadow copies at 7 a.m. The default storage area will be on the same volume. Remember, change the default storage area. We do not want to store these things on the same volume. If you don't get anything else from tonight's podcast, remember I said, don't store this stuff on the same volume. Bad news. And its size will be 10% of the available space. So it automatically will take 10% of whatever your hard drive has to offer. Now you can enable shadow copies or shared folders on a per volume basis. That is, you cannot select specific shared folders and files on a volume to be copied or not copied. Also, you should not use this feature to create shadow copies of files needed for the operating system to run properly. Now remember, take note of that. Remember, we need backups. Don't use this utility and don't use this to back up your Windows operating files, your INI files, your all the stuff that makes Windows happy. Also remember, you can only enable shadow copies on a per volume basis. So you're going to enable it on the shared folders on a particular volume, one volume per shadow copy. To enable and configure shadow copied or shared folders, click Start, click Administrative Tools, and then click on Computer Management. In the console tree on the left, I want you to right-click on the shared folders, click on All Tasks, and then click on Configure Shadow Copies. If you select a volume, click the volume that you want to enable shadow copies or shared volumes, and then just simply click Enable. You will see an alert that Windows will create a shadow copy now with the current settings, and that the settings might not be appropriate for servers with high I/O loads. Now, if you're not familiar with high I/O or what even I/O is, I/O is the rate of speed. It's an input-output. So we gauge everything when we're doing this on a read and a write speed. Input is writing, output is reading. Okay, so it's going in and out. Think of this, I always think of this, and I teach people about this stuff, as a revolving door in a bank or a grocery store. You want something fast enough to allow many, many people in, and we have to have something just as quick enough to get many, many people out. Because as 100 people go in, 100 people should come out to keep a balanced shopping center or a bank or wherever we may be. The same thing happens here with shadow copy. We have to have a large enough and high enough I/O load, because remember, you might not have one user writing at a time. There's times that we would have anywhere up to 1,200 students writing files at one time. And those shadow copies have to be being made on the fly as those kids are using those servers, or as your boss is using it, or CEO, or somebody from your company may be using those files. To make changes to the default schedule or storage area, click on Settings, and then you can make those changes. How do I restore from a previous version of a file or folder? Once you enable shadow copies of shared folders, you can start creating shadow copies. You can use previous versions feature to recover previous versions of the files or folders, or files or folders that have been renamed or were deleted. To restore a previous version of a file, locate the file you want to restore, right-click on the file, click on Properties. The Properties box will appear. Click on the Properties Version tab, as we said before, go into Versions. You'll get a warning message about restoring a previous version will appear. Click on Restore to complete the procedure, and that will put that revisioned folder or that versioned file or folder back to where it originally was. Restoring a previous version will delete the current version. So that's saying, if they have it, say they already have it and they just want you to bring the other version up, so you're going to delete the original version. If you choose to restore a previous version of a folder, the folder will be restored to its state at the date and time the version was selected. Now you will lose any changes that have been made to the file or folder since that time. Now think about that. Let's go back to the lady that was working on a file for a few years. For instance, let's just say for instance here that she didn't hit save before she somehow deleted the file. But she worked in that file all day, and adding new stuff to that file, she added another 100 paragraphs onto that actual file. Well, when you bring that version back, if she didn't hit save, it didn't create a new version, right? So if she just hit delete and we bring that old version back, all the work she currently did maybe today would no longer be there. You have to explain that. That does take a little bit of work. People do get irate. And if they get really irate, tell them to use Google Docs because it saves on its own. We don't have to hit save button. We don't have to really worry about that stuff. Some additional considerations. If the previous versions tab does not appear in your properties dialog box, the shadow copies of shared folders might not be enabled on the shared resource. Shadow copies are copies of files that are located on a server and appear as previous versions. If there are no previous versions listed, the file has not changed since the oldest copy was created. Previous versions show only the unique versions of the file. When you restore a previous version of the folder or file in the current folder that you were not contained in the previous version of the folder, it will not be deleted. Let's go down here a little bit here. When you restore a previous version of a folder or file in the current folder that were not contained in the previous version of that folder, it will not be deleted. So in other words, if you rename something in a folder you have and bring the old name back, the new name is not going to be deleted just because it's in that folder. The only thing this is doing is overwriting the same file name that you previously had and that you saved it in. Restoring a large directory of folder puts a heavy load on your file server. It can result in previous versions being deleted. Try to restore individual files instead of the entire directory when possible. I tried to do this once, and it basically crushed the server down to the point where it had very, very low processing power, processing abilities left. And at the time, I didn't know why that was happening. But what it was it was because it was I was trying to restore everybody's folders at once because the teachers called and something happened to their folders. And I still to this day think it's a permission. Something happened with the permissions. So we went to restore all their files thinking, well, the permissions will be right on the backup. No, or not the backup, I'm sorry, on the shadow copy files. So we grabbed the top directory and went to move it back. And after about 2 or 3 hours, we canceled it. Because it was just crushing the server to the point where nobody could really do anything with their files. So then we had to do it on a per user basis, and that's all that's saying there. Some additional resources you may want to check out about previous versions and shadow copies or shared folders. And recovering files and folders, you can see some of the following resources on the Microsoft website. And I will add these links to tonight's show. So if you go to tips.com/FromTheServerRoom.com, you have more interest, these links will be there. They take in the Microsoft, and there's some very, very good reading in there about previous versions, shadow copies and shared folders, support and backup and recovery strategies, and there's some command line tools that you may want to have a look at. So, folks, I want to thank you very much for joining me here each and every week for Tips from the Server Room. We did get started a little bit later tonight, but I do still have, kids in school, so we've got a track meet, and we go when they have local track meets here, and we take pictures of the kids, my kids, and running track and throwing javelins and stuff. So I did run the show back a little later there. I'm sorry about that, but the show has not yet progressed to the point where we get a live audience on Spreaker. I know we have live listeners on Spreaker, but people don't ordinarily jump in the chat room and say hello or good evening. And you, by all means, can do that. But I want to thank everybody here for tuning into the show each and every week. We're getting a pretty good listener base. And we're getting a few comments, as you heard from Larry tonight. And I would like to get more of you out there commenting and more of you out there chitting and chattering and talking and asking questions. That's what makes these shows progress and makes us become a very active and a very important podcaster in the podcast community. And that's what we're looking to do. Taking my knowledge and paying it forward to help everybody out there with whatever I can help you with. So I want to thank you for signing up. For those of you who signed up already for the server courses at tipsfromtheserveroom.com, if you click on the online class link at the top of the page, it will take you into my server courses. Many of you already signed up, and we can take more. I did an email 1 week and said, Jack, are you still teaching classes? When's the next class start? These classes start the day you sign up. If you sign up at 2 in the morning, the class starts at 2 in the morning, you can start taking it. If you sign up at noon when you're eating your lunch, again, the course starts up at noon, you can start taking it. It's very self-paced. There's no pressure that way. All you do is watch a short video and you take a short little 2 or 3 question quiz. There you can learn Windows Server 2008 R2, as we talked about this evening. You can learn about Windows Server 2012 or VMware ESXi 5.5. And these are all server-related topics, and you will learn it from A to Z, from installation to administration and everything in between, and even far beyond that. Please sign up for one of our online courses, and you can do it again at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Look at the top of the webpage and click on online class link at the top. And again, these courses are self-paced and there's no ever time limit. I've had people in those courses signed up now for the past year and they're still in the course. Just because they completed, I mailed their certificate, everybody's happy with the courses, but they still have access because I had a lady actually email me a few weeks ago and said, Jack, do I still have access to my course? And I said, absolutely, what's wrong? And here she was having an issue with DNS and she just wanted to watch the DNS video again. Excuse me. She wanted to watch the DNS video again just to get more updated on it so she can fix her problem. Then she emailed me back. She said, thanks, Jack. That video worked fine. And she has her DNS issue solved. So that's all it takes. So they're there just like as a resource, just like if you would buy a book to put on your bookshelf, how we always had computer books around. These videos are there forever for you and as a resource. There's no pressure. Once again, you can sign up at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Okay, folks, so I hope everybody has a great work week. I know I was really extremely busy today. We'll take a little sip here, and we have a few minutes. So today I was extremely busy. And I know we teach Windows Server here and server-based applications or server-based stuff or networking, but today I was working on Chromebooks. If you work in a school and you haven't jumped on the Chromebook revolution yet, now's probably the time to do so. These little things are amazing. We have a management control panel in our Google Apps is how it works. So if I go into my Google Apps for the school, I can go into the management console. I see every single Chromebook that we have. I can tell you every application that anybody installed on there. I can lock it down so you can install no applications. We could turn on web filtering. I can filter for any site, even if they have this thing at home. If the kid takes the Chromebook home, we can still filter for any site on there we want to. You have full control over these Chromebooks. But not only that, I talked to a group of students today and I said, what do you think about that Chromebook? All I had was, this is one word I got from multiple kids. Amazing. And I'm thinking, amazing. That's a strange word for a high school student to give me. So I said, elaborate. What's amazing about a Chromebook? Now, we've had laptops in our school for years. But what's amazing about the Chromebooks, they're instant on. The batteries last like 12 to 15 hours. And everything the kid works on there, they don't have to hit save. It just simply saves to Google Docs. And when they go home, they can actually bring up that same file and they can work on it at home, save it, and go back to school. And anywhere they're at, they can work on those files. So that's their word for these Chromebooks is amazing. I unboxed 25 of them today. I got about 9 of them set up on our management console, and I have the rest of them to go tomorrow. So I'll be busy again tomorrow. Some days, that's the kind of day you have. All right, folks, so have a great work week. By all means, send in your stories. Let me hear your stories about what you do, where you work, and if I can read them on the air, on the podcast. It'd be wonderful to get some of these other systems administrators out there and, And let me let you tell your story through me, and let me put them out there for you on these shows. By all means, I'm sure other people want to hear what you are doing in the industry, and maybe even where the industry is going. Do we know? All right. Thanks for listening once again. Thanks for subscribing and downloading to the shows. I do enjoy it, and I enjoy you being here to listen to them each week. I'll talk to you next Tuesday night. Hopefully, I'll be here by 8 o'clock next Tuesday night in case you want to get live on Spreaker. It's 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Spreaker. And if you go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com and click on the radio link at the top, the radio show, and refresh that page, then the live radio show will be there so you don't have to go looking around for the player. All right. Thanks for tuning in. I'll talk to you next week here on Tips from the Serve Room. So long. Take care. You just listened to Tips from the Serve Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Serve Room. So long.